Millions of people are expected to watch the first public hearings in the impeachment inquiry.
This is really a case for Democrats to try to explain why they feel that something was wrong here and irregular. And of course, Republicans are going to be saying the opposite.
It's a busy day on Capitol Hill with separate testimony from Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. And the nation's biggest milk company files for bankruptcy. It's Wednesday, November 13th. This is the AM edition of What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Impeachment hearings may be in the spotlight today, but elsewhere on Capitol Hill, Fed Chair Jerome Powell is in the hot seat. He'll be testifying about the nation's economic outlook and is likely to be pressed on the Fed's signal that it's pausing further rate cuts this year. Powell appears before the Joint Economic Committee for the first time today. Our Nick Timiraos has more.
Powell's testimony is still important to the economy, and he goes up to Capitol Hill every few months. And it's been interesting to watch his reception on Capitol Hill this year because he has been the subject of so much criticism from President Trump. The president, in a speech in New York on Tuesday, again attacked the Federal Reserve. And so it's interesting to see how Congress and how members of Congress, what kind of deference they might show to a Fed leader who's been under really kind of unprecedented piercing criticism from the president who appointed him to the job. The Fed sees itself as something that was created by Congress. So Powell often says that Congress is the boss. And it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic, especially with Republicans, unfolds between the Fed chair and the members of Congress.
Powell testifies before the House Budget Committee tomorrow. A federal regulator has opened an investigation into Google's Project Nightingale, a collaboration between the tech giant and the country's second-largest health system, Ascension. Through the project, the two would collect detailed medical information on 50 million U.S. patients and put it into the cloud, where it could be accessed and analyzed by Google. The Wall Street Journal first reported on the project on Monday. Ascension has begun sharing data, which includes personal information like names, birth dates, diagnoses, and medication and hospitalization history, without notifying the patients or doctors. The news drew immediate criticism from lawmakers and patients over privacy concerns. The Office for Civil Rights in the Department of Health and Human Services has confirmed in a statement to the journal that it would seek to learn more information about the project. A new phase of the impeachment inquiry begins on Wednesday. For the first time, witnesses will testify in public. The House will start with Bill Taylor, the acting ambassador to Ukraine, and George Kent, a senior State Department official. Both have already answered questions behind closed doors. Now, millions of people are expected to tune in to the televised hearings. Joining me now from the Capitol with a brief primer on what to expect is our congressional reporter, Natalie Andrews. Natalie, let's start with the witnesses. Everyone testifying this week has already testified behind closed doors, and we've also seen transcripts from that testimony. Can you recap the major takeaways for us?
Yes, because we've already seen their testimony, we have some expectation of what they're going to say and why Democrats are bringing them back to testify in an open hearing setting. So Bill Taylor, he's the acting ambassador to Ukraine, and he will likely talk about what he called an irregular informal channel that handled Ukraine policy in the Trump administration that included Rudy Giuliani. He also testified that he believed that the release of nearly $400 million in security aid, as well as a White House meeting, was contingent on Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky announcing investigations into the 2016 election and the Biden family. George Kent, he is a senior State Department official, and he will probably outline his concern about these informal diplomatic channels and also go into efforts to oust Marie Yovanovitch, who was the ambassador to Ukraine. And on Friday, we'll hear from Yovanovitch herself, who will talk about how she was pushed out.
So tell us a little bit about the format of this week's hearings now that we're in a more public phase. What will they look like? How will time be allotted? Tell us the details there.
The format will be a little bit different than previous congressional hearings. We're used to seeing a lawmaker in the House get 5 minutes and then another lawmaker gets 5 minutes. And so sometimes it's a little bit disjointed. You have a Republican who goes down a line of questioning and then a Democrat who goes down a completely different line of questioning. What we're going to see here is 45-minute blocks the Republicans and Democrats each get the same amount of time. And what we're expecting is that they will defer to staff questioning and we'll hear from these staff attorneys who will ask the majority of the questioning.
Tell us about these staff attorneys.
So on the Democratic side, we're expecting two Daniels, Daniel Goldman and Daniel Noble. They've both been asking questions behind closed doors. The announcement is not set yet, but they are definitely two key investigators that are part of the Democratic strategy. On the Republican side, Stephen Castor is one to watch. He worked for the Oversight Committee, and then when Jim Jordan last week was named to the Intelligence Committee, Stephen Castor also came over. And he's going to be interesting to watch. He's going to probably try to attempt to poke holes in the witness testimony, and he may attempt to get more information about the whistleblower because that's something he did behind closed doors.
You also break down some of the major themes we should be keeping an eye on as these public hearings begin.
Yeah, this is really a case for Democrats to try to explain why they feel that something was wrong here and irregular. And of course, Republicans are going to be saying the opposite. So look for a heavy emphasis on this irregular diplomacy, the channels that weren't right, why these channels weren't right. These are lifelong diplomats that are going to be testifying. These are people who are not partisan. And so if they're talking about how this was irregular and how they didn't know who was leading policy with Ukraine and how that seemed weird and off and how this pressure on investigations mounted, that's one thing to watch. Also, expect Republicans to really question where these people are getting their firsthand information, or if it's secondhand. Republicans have really drilled into the fact that some of these witnesses weren't on the call on July 25th between the president and Zelensky. They're going to be asking these witnesses, well, where did you hear that? Where is this information from? Because that's one way where they can maybe put some gaps in the testimony.
So, Natalie, finally, a historical question here. How does the impeachment inquiry into President Trump compare to the most recent modern-day impeachment inquiries, in this case, of former Presidents Bill Clinton and former President Richard Nixon?
So in the past two recent impeachment cases, there has been outside investigators that did much of the work. And in this case, we have the House Intelligence Committee. So in the case of Bill Clinton, Kenneth Starr did a grand jury investigation and then sent the information to the House. And in the case of Watergate, there was special counsel Leon Jaworski, who really just sent a roadmap to Congress. And there were also Senate investigations and things like that. We don't have that here. We have what the House Intelligence Committee has done in the past few weeks and has put together. So that's why we're hearing it in the House Intelligence Committee. And then if they gather information that they feel is worthy of impeachment, they will send it to the Judiciary Committee, which would develop articles of impeachment.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Natalie Andrews joining me from Washington. Ahead of today's hearings, the House Intelligence Committee announced additional open hearings next week. Among those set to testify are former Ukraine Special Envoy Kurt Volker and Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland. For our full coverage, head to WSJ.com or the WSJ app. The nation's biggest milk company, Dean Foods, filed for bankruptcy this week. It's a sign of the growing struggles for the dairy industry as U.S. consumers opt for other beverages and milk producers face growing competition from cheaper grocery store brands. Here now with more details on what Dean Foods' bankruptcy means is Wall Street Journal reporter Jacob Bungie. Jacob, what are the particulars of this bankruptcy filing? What drove Dean Foods to this point?
Well, Dean is, as you say, the biggest U.S. milk processor, and they estimate that they handle about 10% of the milk in the country. And two-thirds of their sales are in fluid milk. Now, that's the white kind you buy in the jug at the store. And the problem is that that type of milk has been kind of assaulted on all sides by other competing beverages, and for that matter, by just changes in the way people eat. And I'm talking here about the things that people now will commonly buy at the store instead of or in addition to milk. Everything from bottled water to sports drinks to the soy milks and almond milks and that type of thing that are increasingly competing for space in the dairy. So milk's got a lot more competition than it used to have, and as a result, people are drinking a lot less of it than they once did. Milk consumption on a per capita basis over the last 40 or so years, as per the USDA, is down about 40%.
Wow. So what are you hearing from others in the dairy industry as a whole about how they're trying to adapt to shifting consumer tastes? And are there other products that can help them recoup their losses as less consumers drink dairy milk?
Well, the U.S. farm sector, as far as the farmers go, has been in a tough spot for the last about 5 years, and dairy is no exception to that. In fact, the dairy producers are some of the ones that have really had it the hardest, and that's on account of a sort of long-term decline in consumption of fluid milk, making it that much harder to find a market for a lot of what they produce. Now, even though U.S. milk consumption is way down, as we talked about before, overall dairy product consumption is up. And that's because consumers are just changing where they get their dairy products or where they consume it. And cheese, for example, consumption is way up from what it used to be. People are consuming more yogurt than they once did. The big surge in Greek yogurt a few years ago helping to drive that. So, you know, it's not as though people are turning away from dairy altogether. You can look at pizza, for example, one of the biggest sources of cheese consumption in the United States. So what you're seeing is some of the dairy producers are trying to diversify. They're trying to invest more in these value-added products that can be made from their cow's milk. But at the same time, it's awfully difficult for particularly the smaller dairy producers who are having to scrape by a really low profit margins and making it through this period of really low prices for milk and for many agricultural products.
That's the Wall Street Journal's Jacob Bungie. And that's what's news for this Wednesday morning. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.